Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is an Our Paranormal Afterlife extra episode, and I'm your host, Simon Bowen. In this episode, I'm talking to John Gregory Reed about his book, What I Saw: Near-Death Experiences. And just so you know, there is an Our Paranormal Afterlife Facebook group, and if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. Hi, John. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me, Simon.
So the book's called What I Saw: Near-Death Experiences. So could you tell us what inspired you to write this book on near-death experiences?
Well, my inspiration started probably decades ago when Dr. Raymond Moody came out with his book, Life After Life, in 1975. I was fascinated with the book. And so over the decades, I've been thinking about writing about individuals. I never experienced it, but I always want to write about other people's experiences. And so I think my book that I put together has one of the largest collections. It has 40 individuals and their perspective and what they saw. And I just wanted other people to learn about it. I mean, especially the younger people. I think more young people are interested in it than the older generation. But those that are approaching death themselves, whether it's in hospice care or a disease or whatever, I think they're drawn to it too, because it gives them some comfort. So that's one reason I was interested in writing this book.
So how did you collect the stories that you've got in the book?
The collection actually started with me reading about these individuals. There was a few movies that came out. One of them was called Heaven Is For Real, about a little boy who died, Carlton Burpo. He was 4 years old. And that movie and another movie, which I can't think of the name, involved a five-year-old girl. And this happened just a few years ago. And so then that's when I started collecting the stories. Most of it come from websites, YouTube videos, and books. But it was hard to put together. It really was. I actually dug into newspaper articles also. That's included in my books. But I had to do a lot of digging because of all the people who have come forth to talk about their near-death experiences. Very few. I think most of it has to do with either their religious upbringing, that they don't want to talk about it, their experience, or they just didn't remember after they had the experience. But it was kind of hard for me to put the book together and find that many people.
And have you had any of your own kind of spiritual experiences?
Yes, I have. I think it was in 1988 when my father passed away. He was only 58. I was like 28 at the time. And he had cancer, and we thought he was getting better. The doctors actually said he was improving. So he got sick one day, and they took him to the hospital. And my mother was the only one that went with them. The rest of my brother, and my three sisters, we all stayed at our prospective homes, expecting him to come home the next day. But at 3 o'clock that morning, I actually awoke in the middle of the night, and I felt like he was in the room with me. I said, that is the most oddest feeling. I just knew he was there. And then within 30 minutes, my mother called to say that my dad had passed away. So that was kind of pushed me into this study of near-death experience, because it made me realize there is something more than what we as humans know as far as near-death experience goes.
When you have your own experiences, it shows you that there really is something there, and it makes reading about all these other things more real in a way and more believable.
That's true. And, I've talked to other people. I worked as a nurse for 35 years, and I've seen people who have died. Very few of them did we bring back. But before they would pass away, someone would sit in the bed and just stare, like they're staring at something, like someone or something. and then they would pass away. So my interest is also medically, as far as being a nurse and seeing people die. And I've never talked to anybody who I've revived, because there's very few people that survive CPR. But I always was curious about what they may have seen.
There's something called deathbed visions, isn't there, that happens, people seeing things in the last few days and hours before they die.
Yes, that's true. And I think that some people, it's sort of like my grandfather. He was, he had just turned 90. He was a veteran. He fought in World War One. My dad was going to take him to the Veterans Hospital for a physical. And my grandfather says, no. He says, I can't go. He said, I want to die in my home. And my dad said, well, you'll be fine. They're going to do a complete checkup. And he said, no, I won't. If you take me, I won't be coming back. So anyway, my father took him to the VA hospital, and he passed away within an hour of getting there. So I think people have a sense or some forebearing of what's going to happen in their lives, especially as you get older.
Is there one story that in the book that really stands out for you, or is there one you like to talk about?
Yes, there's actually two stories, and both of them have to do with doctors. You know, you think that if near-death experiences were made up, it wouldn't be by a doctor. But the first gentleman I want to talk about is somebody that you also wrote about, is Dr. George Ritchie. He was the gentleman that actually got Dr. Raymond Moody involved in near-death experience and led him to write his book, Life After Life, in 1975. But George Ritchie, his experience started in 1943 when he was a private in the Army, and he was stationed in Texas. And he came down with pneumonia, but at first he didn't realize how sick he was. He kept, you know, fighting off going to the medical ward. And by the time he was taken in to be examined, he had full-blown pneumonia, and he stopped breathing. And in those days, they didn't have CPR like we do today, or they didn't know about CPR. So they declared him dead, and he actually found himself wandering around the medical ward of the hospital that he was at. He first, you know, wandered around the ward. And then before this happened, he was planning on going to medical school in University of Virginia. And in Richmond, Virginia, to the Medical College of Virginia. And he was, when his thoughts returned to his medical college, he was automatically transferred or transported to that location. He can see the Medical College of Virginia in Richmond, where he was planning on going. Of course, there was more involved in his transportation. He went to other places before he went there. But after his episode, which lasted about 9 minutes, he was revived. And this story stuck in his mind for years and years, because he had a lot of stuff that he saw, which I'm not even going to talk about because it would cover a book. But I think you did a very good writing on him in your book, which you went into more detail. But if it wasn't for Dr. George Ritchie, I don't think we would be as aware of near death, because it was through him that Dr. Raymond Moody met in 1965 while he was going to medical school. Dr. Ritchie was actually a medical doctor, but after many years of practice, he decided to go back into psychiatry, and that's where Dr. Raymond Moody met him at. He met him at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, Virginia. And that actually led to a further investigations. And Dr. Moody, he began his research, which uncovered many, many more people that had never, ever reported it before. So that's one reason I picked him. And he is the first person in my book to write about. The very last person in my book that I wrote about was also a doctor. His name was Dr. George Redonia. And he was born in Moscow, and he lived there during the Soviet era, which was communist control. But he was also a doctor in neuropathology, and he was struck by a car and killed while walking on the streets in Moscow. And the reason I put him as the last character is because he is the person that I found that had the longest period of visit to another realm. He was declared dead for 3 days. He was actually taken to the morgue, where 3 days later it was found that he was still alive, and they brought him back. But during his travels and the things that he saw, he was actually was able to come back and visit his wife, who was at the graveside picking out his grave. And not only did he see his wife, but he was able to read her mind. She was sitting there thinking of all kinds of things, like who is she going to be able to find as her next husband, which is kind of funny, considering that she's at his funeral. And at the same time, he also saw a hospital beside of where the morgue was, and a little girl was being born. And the baby was dropped by the nurse, and the baby's hip was broken. But she didn't tell the doctors anybody, but the baby kept crying and crying and crying. So after Dr. George Rodonia was revived, he told his wife about what he saw, that he saw her at the graveside, and that she was thinking of husbands. And of course, this was true. She confessed that was true, but she felt violated that he was had entered her mind. And also, as far as the baby's concerned, after a day or two, he told the doctors in the hospital that about this little baby, that they need to go to this ward and check this baby out because it's got a broken hip. So they went to the ward and found that the baby was in discomfort and crying. So they did an X-ray, and sure enough, the hip was broken. So these two stories fascinated me because one was Dr. George Rodonia was over 3 days that he was declared dead, and Dr. George Ritchie was 9 minutes. But during those times, they both recounted that it seemed like years to them. Time and space sort of vanished. There was no time in this next realm that they were in. Everything happened at once. When they both were given a review of their life, they said it was like instantaneous. It's like they knew what was shown before them, even though it was like a review in a movie form, but it happened all at one time. And both of them said that neither one of them, during their review of their life, were they ever judged. The judgment was what type of judgment they placed on themselves as far as the wrongdoings or whatever. But both men, after they were revived and they survived, they were completely changed individuals. Dr. George Ritchie started a youth corps, which was to help young people, and it was mostly geared toward Christianity. He was a very religious person after this. And he started this youth corps, which later John F. Kennedy, the president of the United States, he developed the Peace Corps, which was based on this. And as far as Dr. George Rodonia goes, he was a completely changed man because he was an atheist before this incident. After he came back, he went back to school and got a degree in divinity, and he became a pastor. And he moved to the United States and started a church here. So these two individuals were two of the highlights of my book. One is the beginning and one is at the end.
So part of that is the verification, the veridical parts of the near-death experiences. And I think this is a really crucial part of it. Do you have others in the book? What do you think this kind of verified thing can tell us?
verifying their stories, like Dr. George Ritchie, he actually described several locations. Like he described a cafe and a blinking light at an intersection. And this was verified. Everything he gave a description, there was a place like that. And the as far as Dr. George Redonia, his wife verified that what he said he saw was accurate, that she was at the graveside and she was thinking about picking out, you know, who her next husband would be, which is very unusual for somebody married for years. And also, there's another story in the book about it, another doctor. I'm sorry, I'm picking on doctors all of a sudden, but I think doctors are a good example because nobody would think a doctor would lie about near-death experiences. But there was a doctor, Raji Porte, who was a doctor here in Bakersfield, California. He was the head of anesthesiology at the Bakersfield's Heart Hospital. He was very well-to-do. He actually had his own mansion. He had nice cars, and he was very successful. But he came down with cancer, prostate cancer. And in around 2010, he had prostate surgery. Everything went fine, but following the surgery, he started having a lot of complications. And he underwent some more surgeries. And finally, during one of the surgeries, he experienced a near-death experience. And he witnessed the anesthesiologist who was doing his case is telling a dirty joke while the surgery is going on. And he also was able to visit his mother and sister in India and saw them and remember what they were doing, that they were cooking a certain meal. And during the surgery, one of the nurses went around, and I know this happens because I worked in OR, but sometimes you have, during surgery, there may be a strong odor, like you have a bad wound or something. He obviously had an infection and a wound, and the nurse had to go around and put some scent on the doctor's and nurse's mask to kind of help the doctors get through the surgery because the smell was so strong. So after he was revived, he told the anesthesiologist about the jokes he was telling, and every one of them was accurate. There's no way he could have known because he was under deep anesthesia at that time. And he told the nurse about her going around putting this eucalyptus scent on everybody's mask, and it was proven to be true. Plus, his mother and sister verified that that they, at that time, were cooking a certain meal in India. So this kind of verifies that there's more to these stories than just makeup or make-believe.
That stuff is verified. What's that say for the spiritual experiences people had? That lends more credence to them, doesn't it?
The spiritual concept is really amazing because in my book, I have a mixture of Muslim, Christians, Jewish, and Buddhists, and atheists. Every one of them came back spiritually changed. They were more enthralled into life itself. They didn't take anything for granted. Love was the number one essence to all of them, even the atheists. When they came back, they believed and spread the word of love, that was the most important thing. But most of them became religion, and they didn't necessarily become a Christian. Some of them, one of the gentlemen that I wrote about was a Muslim gentleman. When he died, he actually experienced what he said was a hell. He saw people that was in a pit, a dark pit with a fire next to them. And they weren't actually in the fire, but they were close enough that it was burning their skin. And it was like torture. And when he returned from his experience, he became a more devout Muslim. in the Muslim religion, they don't really preach a lot about love and compassion, but he was so much changed that he started focusing on that and trying to get his fellow Muslims to preach love and not hatred. So it is a spiritual change. And also I have atheists who have passed away and they came back and they became more spiritual. Actually, some of them became Christians. So the spiritual realm, I think, as one person described it, our world, the earth, is actually another dimension from this heaven that they go to. It's actually, they coincide. This heaven is real because every one of them, when they explain it, it's all in color, it's all in feeling. As they said, they know the difference between a dream state and a non-dream state. And they said this was not a dream state. It was very physical. It was very colorful. People who saw the light, sometimes it's so bright, it was almost blinding to them. Some people saw colors, amazing colors they couldn't even describe. As they said, it was not even explainable on Earth. The music that they heard was, they said, beyond explanation. So I don't think a person who's near, who actually is, the brain is shutting down, would experience these things, especially similar experiences. Every one of them has similar experiences.
And you've mentioned earlier the Life Review. Do you think there's a message for all of us and the Life Review of how we should treat people?
Actually, I do. And just doing this book has changed me. I've never experienced a near-death experience, but reading their stories has really changed me. Their story, when they come back, a lot of them wrote books because they wanted other people to know. They didn't want to keep it to themselves. But the number one thing was love. They said that was the number one language that that was taught to them when they were there. Love is the main thing about these experiences. Every one of them, whether it's Muslim, Buddhist, Christian, Jew, they all came back with the expression of love is the language that we need to be speaking to everyone and sharing with one another. We can't judge another person on their walk in life because we don't know what they've experienced, but we need to show them love and compassion. We don't know how these people are going to be judged, but we will be judged according to how we treat other people. One of the things that I've noticed that in Christianity is they teach us that when you die, that you go to judgment. And if you've done, you know, according to what you've done, you're going to go to heaven or hell. But according to these survivors of near-death experience, when they return, they said that when they had their life review, it wasn't a judgment like taught in Christianity. It was a judgment of ourselves. We had a life review. We saw our good and bad. And what we put on ourselves was our punishment. But these beings told us they weren't judging them. They wanted them to see what they've done. So there was no judgment. It was all about love and forgiveness. So that's a difference in the Christianity aspect of it as far as heaven or hell. I believe the individuals who live a bad life, that they are piling on an emotional baggage, which when they die, it will put them in a type of a hell unless they can get out of it. One of the people who, in my book, said that he went to hell and he saw hell and it was just a place of torment. But when he all of a sudden said he forgave himself and he asked God to help him, all of a sudden there was a bright light and he was taken to heaven. So I believe that we can be released from that hell or whatever it is that we imprisoned ourselves with as far as our mental standing. I think that we are going to be completely surprised when we go to the next realm, based on what I've written and what I've read about.
And there's also Howard Storm's near-death experience, where I think he started praying and that lifted him out of a hellish experience.
Howard Storm is also a unique individual. He was actually in Paris at the time, which he is an American citizen. But I believe he had a problem with his bowel where it ruptured. And he actually had a near-death experience there. I'm just turning to my notes to reflect on Howard Storm.
Yeah.
He was pretty much an atheist. He was exposed to Christianity as a child, you know, through his parents, but he was the type of person that had to have proof that there was something more. So he was pretty much an atheist. But when he died, he realized that he was dead, because he knows the difference between sleep and awake, and he knew he was in a different realm. But he knew right away that there was something more, because he wasn't alive and he wasn't dead. He saw his wife, actually he floated above his body and saw his wife sitting in a chair beside the bed. Then later he heard somebody calling him, Howard, come here. He followed these individuals down the corridor because he was drawn to them, but he started following them. And as he went down the corridor, the corridor became darker and darker, and more of these individuals started showing up. So eventually, he realized that he was in a bad place. He didn't know how to get out of it, but he just knew these beings were becoming more and more of them. And then they started tearing at him, just tearing pieces of him, his clothes, everything. And he didn't know what to do, but he remembered as a child some of the prayers his mother had taught him. So he started saying a prayer to God. And as soon as he started saying a prayer to God, he was enveloped in a light. And he describes the light as being warm and loving. It's sort of like a peaceful feeling, but it was opposite of where he was. He was in a nice warm area. He was taken into the light and saved from these entities. And he realized that he was being taken because of his own beliefs as an atheist, was taken into hell, which, like I said, I believe these are emotions and guilt that we put on ourselves. But when he started saying a prayer, he actually was saved by the light. And he actually went into heaven. He saw radiant beings. And he actually, I think he wrote a book about it. But when he was recovered from his surgery, he became a pastor. And he actually became a very prominent pastor. I believe he's wrote several books. He's preached in many churches throughout the United States. He wrote a book called My Descent into Death, and then he wrote one about following Jesus. So he very much had a spiritual awakening. That's a good example of a person having near death and a spiritual awakening.
And it's a good example of how much a near-death experience can change people.
Yeah. I think they said that adults report less near-death experiences than children. I think children, 85% of them report a near-death experience if they are recovered. But even the children are changed. Two of my children that I wrote about in my book was, one was Colton Burpo, and the other one, was her name was Beam. Let me see if I can find her name.
Okay.
Annabelle Beam. She was 5 years old. He was 4 years old. Two children from two different communities in the United States. Different upbringings. But Colton, when he had his experience, when he came back from his surgery, it was later that he told his mom that he wanted to see Jesus again. And she said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Yeah, I sat in the lap of Jesus." Well, this is almost identical to what Annabelle Beam said when she was out playing with her sister in the yard. And she was, of course, 5 years old, and she had climbed up onto a cottonwood tree. She fell down into the cottonwood tree, and they couldn't get her out. It was a hollow area of the tree, but she had fallen probably 15, 20 feet down into the tree. So they called the rescue squad to come and the firefighters come get her out. So it took them a long time to get her out. But during this time, supposedly she had her near-death experience. And she actually said that she saw Jesus and got to sit in his lap. So after they got her out and she was taken to the hospital, she actually had some gastric problems. She was born with gastrointestinal issues, which was some kind of a disease, which I don't remember the name of right now. But following her near-death experience, these problems went away. They were actually cured. And she told her mother that she had sat in the lap of Jesus. So children have similar experiences. Both of these stories were so amazing that these children, it changed their lives so much that they went to school and were telling their schoolmates about their experiences. And the teachers actually told their mothers that they needed to stop because of what they were doing wasn't appropriate in school. But it's hard to stop a young child from telling what things that they saw. The Annabelle Beam story was actually made into a movie called Miracles from Heaven, which her mother wrote. And Colton Burpo, his family wrote a book called Heaven is for Real. I believe that both of these families, or at least one of these families, actually started a ministry based on their child and their experience. It doesn't just change adults, it changes children also.
People seem to have near-death experiences which are tailored just right for them. The detail of it seems perfect for them. Who or what decides what will happen in a person's near-death experience?
You know, I don't know who or what decides what they experience, but you are correct. There are people of different backgrounds that when they die, they actually, the life that they see after death is tailored to their way of seeing things. Sort of like the Muslim gentleman that I was talking about that died and went to hell. When he saw the illumination of an entity, he referred to him as an inman. I think that's how you say it in the Islamic faith, but they're leaders, religious leaders. So he saw a Muslim religious leader. One of the Buddhist women who I wrote about, she actually died in the 16th century, but she left a book, wrote about her experience. She actually saw gods, or like Buddha and stuff, different gods that Buddha taught about. So it's tailored to the individual's religious experience. And I believe that's a way of not shocking them. I mean, when you go into another life or another realm, and you experience something that's against everything you were taught, I think it would be hard to accept. So I don't know what or who decides what you see, but I think there's a reason behind everything. Yeah, I think that's very interesting.
And I wonder sometimes if it's a space they go to is not the real afterlife. It's kind of might call it the theater of the near-death experience, some kind of holding space or halfway house where all this is put together for them.
You know, that is a possibility. One of the things that I used to read about is that Tibetan monks, they used to, I don't think they can do it anymore, but this is back before China took over Tibet. But these monks for hundreds of years would go into solitary areas like a cave or somewhere, and they would meditate for hours on end. But they learned how to actually detach themselves from their body and go into this realm, which a lot of people describe as near death. But their travel in the near death, they were attached to their body by a silver cord that attached their body to their living body. So wherever their spiritual body went, they were always attached to their body. And I have one case in my book. Her name is Laurie Lambert. She had a near-death experience at 19 years old where when she was in a kayak. She was pushed into a waterfall and drowned. But she said that when she left her body and she saw them working on her, she could also see a silver cord. She was attached to the silver cord. I've never had other people write about that other than what I read about monks. But the monks write in their books that if the silver cord is ever cut, then that's it. You're into the next life. They said that this was a realm of being between two states. So you're right. It could be a realm where it's like a holding pattern realm where you're accustomed to the environment before you go on. But I think it's interesting that she was the only one that reported the silver cord. But as far as going on to further, there, I think half of the people or a third of the people I wrote about came to a border where they said they knew that if they went further, they weren't going to return. It could be a gate. It could be a light. It could be a dark corridor, but they said that if they knew that this was the barrier, if they went any further, they weren't returning. So I don't know if this is a halfway travel place or what it is. That's something we'll never be able to answer until we're actually faced with that.
And have you come across stuff within near-death experiences that links to or hints at reincarnation?
Reincarnation is mentioned by some of the people who have returned, not all of them, but some of them. Even some of the pastors who are Christian religious pastors have experienced near death, and they were actually shown not just their past wrongs and rights, but they're shown past lives. They said that they have lived before. And I think this may go back to the Buddhist teachings of reincarnation, where if you live a life and you don't learn what you need to learn, you're going to come back. You're going to continuously come back until you have reached a certain level of learning. So that's also mentioned by some of my my near-death experience stories. I've actually written three books. One of them just came out today, but all three books are linked to each other. There's a doctor, Tony Sicario. He's an orthopedic doctor. He was a well-established orthopedic doctor, and he was at a family reunion in upstate New York when he went to use a payphone. He hung up the payphone, and there's a lady behind him waiting to get on it. So before he could step away from the payphone, a lightning bolt hit the phone and came out of the phone and hit him in the face. So supposedly witness said it hit him in the head and went out through his feet because it knocked him about 4 or 5 feet. He was instantaneously taken out of his body. He can actually see his body laying on the ground. He saw the woman checking on him. He can see other people running up to help provide CPR. But in his experience, he also, I think, mentioned something about in his life review that he had lived previous lives. So he can go into my book that I wrote about reincarnation, but he's also in my book, A Near-Death Experience. But when he recovered, when he came to and he was saved, within days, he started focusing on playing the piano. And so he's in my third book, which is called Sudden Genius, which is about people who acquire savant syndrome. Because he was hit in the head and he had damage to the left side of his brain, his right side, which is our creative side of the brain, took over for him. And he became a concert pianist. He never had an interest in the piano. But after this, he all of a sudden was drawn to playing the piano, and within no time, he was a well-trained pianist. So everybody who experienced near death can fall into many categories. And it's hard to explain. It's still, the brain is a mystery, and it's still under studies. They have a near-death experience research foundation, which is the largest foundation in the world researching this. And they're trying to find a link to all of this, how they all come together. And to me, I don't care how many research centers we have, I don't think no one's ever going to learn until it's actually our time that we have to leave this world and face death ourselves. One thing I'd like to mention before we ask the next question is that they're always asked, what did you learn? What did you learn out of this life when they had these near-death experiences? So I think when they're asked what do they learn, it kind of links it back to reincarnation. Like, have you learned enough, or do you need to go back? I mean, it's hard to explain.
So do you feel for yourself, or for everybody, that near-death experiences are proof of an afterlife? Or would you say they're just evidence there might be an afterlife?
I don't think anybody is ever going to be able to say it's proof enough. I think it's evidence. The book that I wrote, I mentioned at the end of it that each individual who reads the book will have to take away from their own perspective of each story and form their own opinion, whether it's an evidence or whether it's proof. I think it's not a direct proof, but it's evidence enough for me to believe that there is.
Yeah, I feel the same, particularly when it's those veridical near-death experiences where something out of body that they've seen is proven and verified.
I mean, it's sort of like if somebody asked me to prove that it's cold where I'm staying, where I am right now being interviewed, so it'd be hard for me to prove to you that I'm cold or if I'm hot. I had to explain it to you. So it's in that category of another person hearing another person's story. What kind of proof is there? There is no proof. I can't prove to you that it's cold here unless you're here. So it's the same thing as near-death experience. Unless you experience it, you're not going to have any proof.
It's been great talking to you. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. The book's called What I Saw, Near-Death Experiences, and people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
That's correct. The book is available on Amazon. You can get it. I only have it in paperback or ebook format.
And that's worldwide. And the other two books, they're going to be out now? Is one of them out now, and then there's going to be another one?
Actually, all three of them are out. The one before this book that you're talking about now is called Reincarnation, 35 Unexplained True Stories, in which I talk about 35 individuals who have experienced or reported reincarnation. This newest book I got out was called Sudden Genius. It's about acquired savant syndrome. But if you read this book, Near-Death Experiences, I don't just have ordinary people, and I have actually celebrities in it. I have George Foreman. I also have Jane Seymour, which is a British actress. I think a lot of people in England would be interested to know that she also had a near-death experience, and that's explained in the book, and she actually talks about it herself.
Yeah, and the actor Jeremy Renner has been talking about his experience now as well.
A lot of people, I think, are coming forward. I think originally people were hesitant to come forward, but I think as more and more people come forward, it opens the door for others. But if anybody listening to this podcast has an experience, please go to the website, Near Death Experience Research Foundation, and go on to it, and you can make a report, because we need as many reports as possible to get this story out. And the more stories we get and the more that we have a comparison, it leads us from evidence to more leaning toward proof. So please go to that website.
And do you have plans for another book?
At the moment, I don't. I have a bunch of biographies out about Americans who were not very well known but made a difference in our history. Some of them were from Ireland. One of them was from Ireland, but he came to America. And one came from Italy. So they're not necessarily Americans, but they're people who made a difference in America, American history. I don't have any idea for my next book, but when it pops in my head, I'm going to start on it.
Well, great. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Simon. It's nice that you were able to contact me and arrange for this.
And that was an interview with John Gregory Reed about his book, What I Saw, Near-Death Experiences. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.